is noon on YouTube, but it is 5 o'clock somewhere. Welcome to another episode of Fantasy Football Happy Hour. I am your faithful bartender, Matthew Berry. Joining me today is my dear friend from ESPN. He's currently live from Cowboys camp, Dan Graziano. Dan Graziano, of course, is a unbelievable NFL insider. But more importantly, Dan, you are a degenerate like the rest of us. You are in multiple fantasy football leagues. So you know what we want.
I do. I think I do. It's not 5 o'clock here, though. It's only 9 a.m. So we got the whole spectrum of the potential, you know, happy hour day covered. But yeah, I'm into it. I just got the email this morning from the commissioner of the league. I've been in for 32 years. We're firing that thing back up again this year. So yeah, I'm ready to go. Everywhere I go, I'm asking coaches fantasy stuff.
It's when you ask them fantasy stuff, do you ask them like, do they know that you're asking a fantasy question, or do you try to couch it?
It really kind of depends on the relationship. but there are some that I'm more comfortable sort of being transparent. But I mean, you know, sometimes you'll ask like Rams people about the running backs and be like, oh, is that a fantasy question? I'm like, hey, fantasy is a big part of our audience. Of course it is. Like that's absolutely. Oh, yeah, never mind. I'm taking notes too.
Hey, of course. Absolutely. Like this is what we need. We need the good stuff. And I know you've been doing a training camp tour. So you've been at a number of camps and we're going to get into all of that coming up here in a second. Of course, everyone should follow you on social media at Dan Graziano ESPN. But Dan, you're at Cowboys camp. So I just have to ask this question first and foremost, will you get on the bus today? Will you get on Jerry's bus at some point today?
So when I was here a few years ago, I got in, you know, the night before, and Todd Archer, who covers the Cowboys for us, we went out to dinner and he was like, hey, at the end of dinner, he's like, I know where Stephen Jones and all these guys are having dinner tonight. We should go stake it out. And I was like, really? That's how you do the job? He's like, yeah, trust me. So we end up at this restaurant and like he identifies when they get dessert. We go over to say hi to them. Before we know it, we're all on the bus till like midnight drinking, you know, Miller Lights with Stephen Jones and Will McClay and that whole crew. And then, a little bit around midnight, they said, well, time for you guys to go. And we went and we get off the bus and Todd said to me, was that not useful to you? And I said, I'll never doubt you again. But anyway, Todd and I had dinner last night, but no bus. We did not connect with the Cowboys brass, sadly.
Well, maybe this time we'll do. But what I was going to say, what I was trying to get to is you and I became friends a long time ago. And our friendship, we had obviously met in the halls of ESPN, but our friendship really got forged. One night we go out to dinner at the Combine. It's my first NFL Combine. And I'm not going to name any names, but there were definitely people at ESPN. I was there on ESPN's dime, but there were people there at ESPN that did not want to help me out at the Combine. I didn't know what I was doing. So they're just sort of like, good luck to you. But you, Dan Graziano, and our mutual friend and my former colleague, Jason Reed, the great Jay Reed, you guys said, hey, come out to dinner and I'll take you under my wing. And sort of you showed me around the Combine. You introduced me a ton of coaches and contacts, and it's been awesome. But what happened that night, and this is why Dan is such a dear friend of mine, what happens that night is we get hammered, absolutely blitzed, me, you, and Jay Reed at dinner. And then we're going out to different restaurants, everything like that. And we go to this restaurant that everyone, all the coaches always go to, called Prime 47 in Indianapolis, legendary steakhouse. And so we're there and we're getting hammered and we come out and it's freezing cold. It's like the end of February. It's freezing cold. I don't have a jacket.
Wasn't that cold.
And like, there's no cabs around. We look for an Uber. It's like 20 minutes away. And we're like, it looks like we're going to have to walk back to the JW. We're all staying at the JW Marriott, which is probably like a 10, 12 minute walk from something like that, right? 10 minutes maybe?
Yeah.
Right. So it's cold. And so, but Jerry Jones's bus is out there, the legendary Jerry Jones's bus. And so as we're walking, as you and I are walking, Dan, across the street, ready to make this trek back to our hotel, Jay Reed, the fearless Jay Reed, goes and bangs on the door of the bus. And the bus driver opens it up and he goes, yeah. And Jay Reed goes, and we're like running after Jay Reed because we're like, dude, you're hammered. You know, we don't want you to do anything dumb.
Yes. Right.
And so, Jay Reed turns to the bus driver and he says, he's pointing at me. He goes, you know who this guy is? You ever watch SportsCenter, NFL Live? You ever seen this guy on TV? And the guy looks at me and he's just like, yeah, I know who that is. And he's just like, well, we're cold. And we need a ride to the JW. And the bus driver looks at us and says, like, I can't. You know, Mr. Jones, I'm waiting for Mr. Jones. I'll get fired. And Jay Reid's like, what are you talking about? We just came from him. Jerry's holding court. He's surrounded by a bunch of people. He's not coming out for an hour. It's just 5-minute drive. Just drive us over to the JW. Come on, we're freezing, man. And the guy looks at us, takes a second, and goes like, come on in. And next thing you know, Dan Graziano, me, you, and Jay Reid are rolling up to the JW in front of all of our colleagues and basically every journalist in the NFL. And here comes and Jerry's bus, which you can't miss. And then we roll out of it.
Yes. And so a couple things about that. One, like idiots, we ended up going back out to Prime 47, even after like the most triumphant return ever in Combine history, because we were afraid we're going to miss some agent who probably wasn't going to talk to us anyway. And then 3 years ago, when I'm sitting on the Cowboys bus here in Ventura Beach, we're having a good time. And Stephen Jones says to me, Dan, you ever been on a bus before? And I was like, you know what? Yes, but it wasn't a sanctioned appearance. And so I told this story, which he thought was funny. The bus driver didn't. He was like, that wasn't me, which it wasn't. They have a new bus driver. But Stephen thought that was a good story, which was a relief.
Yes. And by the way, and that is why, as Aloha Brick says, Barry in midseason form, telling these long stories again. Yes, but you know what? That's how Dan and I, that night, me, Dan, and Jay Reid getting hammered at the Combine and somehow getting a ride on Jerry Jones's bus is why you and I become such good friends. And every year, it's been, I think, 9 years now, every year at the Combine, me, you, and Jay Reid always make sure we have a dinner and a night of drinking for the three of us. So, and I thought it was okay to tell that story on air because I knew that you had...
Yeah, it's out there.
All right, let's get to the news of the day, and then I want to get training camp, but let's start real quickly. Falcons just signed Bijan Robinson, massive deal. He is now the highest paid running back in the NFL, and so he has reset the market. So the question that I have for you is Jahmyr Gibbs, right? Mm-hmm. He also wants a new deal. As a fantasy manager, where have you heard Ron, from your sources in terms of where a deal is for Gibbs? If a deal doesn't get done because the market just got reset, are you worried that he might hold out? Should fantasy managers be concerned here? Talk to me a little bit about how this contract affects Jahmyr Gibbs and who are you taking number one if you had that pick in your league?
Yeah, he can't really hold out. The new CBA rules really prevent that. So that's why you see these guys show up to camp and then just not practice, which is what Jahmyr Gibbs has been doing. But they're talking. It's not a contentious situation. It's not a, you know, it's not like the situation here last year, right, with Micah Parsons. I think in these situations, two guys at the same position trying to get these new deals, one kind of, they're each kind of waiting for the other one to go first and then the second one will top him. And so I would be surprised if we don't have news on a Jahmyr Gibbs deal pretty soon. They're complicated deals. And really, when you look at it, like, it's not just the average salary. Yes, he's highest paid, Bijan. But these three-year extensions are a big thing to keep an eye on because of the salary cap growth, the teams want to do longer-term extensions so they can break up the signing bonus money in their accounting. And the players want to do shorter ones so they can get to the market again once the salary cap has skyrocketed. So that is often the point of contention. So it's really not about, will Jahmyr Gibbs make more money than Bijan Robinson, but can he get the structure that he wants? Obviously, Bijan did, getting the three-year extension.
So answer my question. You've got the number one pick in your league. Gibbs. Who are you taking? You're taking Gibbs.
I like Jahmyr. It'd be great to be picking second in that draft, right? But I had Gibbs on a team a couple of years ago and just like, I got hooked on it, man. And this was when David Montgomery was still a big part of things there. But just like, it's touchdowns, it's big play, it's catches, it's everything you possibly want. And in, you know, I kind of default to the better offenses, and I feel like Detroit's offense is still better than Atlanta's overall.
I currently have Bijan number one, and I have him by a split second. As Jay Woogie 66 says, Bijan's better, but Gibbs gets more goal line looks. I get that. The only argument I have for Bijan over Gibbs is twofold. Is number one is I think Tua is going to start. Do you believe Tua will start for the Falcons as opposed to Penix?
Yeah, I guess neither one of them has practiced yet, right?
Yeah.
But yes, I think because Penix is still not cleared for 11 on 11s, I think Tua has the edge. He's that guy's actually been practicing with the team.
Yeah, so my feeling is you think about how many times Tua dumped down Devon Achane, right? So like I just feel like Bijan's going to Bijan might get, you know, 90 receptions this year. Like, I just, and I feel like there's less targets to, you know, there's less target competition for Bijan Robinson, because really, like, it's Drake London, it's Kyle Pitts, and it's him. That's it. But in the Lions, like, you know, you have Amon-Ra, you have Jameson Williams, you have Laporta, Isaac Tesla is going to become a thing this year for a little bit, right? I mean, like, they just have a lot more mouths to feed, and just us look up at the end of the year, and Pacheco has, like, 7 rushing touchdowns. And so I just, again, like, you have to nitpick, like, again, it's 1.01, 1.011, but at the moment I have Bijan over Gibbs, but
yeah,
both are
the backup thing's interesting, because, like, I don't know what we've seen from Isaiah Pacheco that would convince us he's a real threat to steal goal line work from anyone when they tried to give it to him in Kansas City and he wasn't any good at it. And then, you know, you have to, if you draft Bijan, you have to also draft Brian Robinson. And I think that's going to get confusing. I mean, I think, like, if you click the wrong B Robinson, like, after the bye week, like, you're hosed at that point. And so I just think having, you know, the Pacheco, that's easy to differentiate with Gibbs. So I worry about getting trapped in that B Robinson trap.
I could certainly see that. You just make sure you make your pick and then get drunk. Don't be drunk when you make the pick. Knowing when to get drunk is always very important. Yes, DM Goose says, can't wait to see all the videos of people drafting Brian Robinson number one overall. See? That's definitely coming.
What I'm saying.
It's definitely happening.
Right. You're not at risk of drafting Jonathan Gibbs, right? Like, he's not on there. So yeah, Jameer, much safer. That's the tiebreak. Go with that.
So Zay Flowers, just before we came on air, Dan, Zay Flowers signs a huge extension, right? Like 4 years, $140 million, right? So you see it there on your screen. I've got him at wide receiver. I've got him at 33 overall. I've got him wide receiver 15. I mean, we talked about him yesterday. He's one of my buddy Lawrence Jackson's players that he drafts the most. We each did our 5 players we draft the most yesterday on the show. So check that out on Happy Hour.
On my drive up from El Segundo. Yes.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I listen, and I don't care if people listen. I just want the clicks, but I appreciate both the download, click, and you
actually. There was a lot of traffic.
Yeah, fair enough. I understand.
Yeah.
But Dan, today on fantasylife.com, you know, we do a free newsletter every single day. Peter Overzet does a great job, writes it for us. And today he brought out the fact that that some of our analysts over at fantasylife.com are a little bit nervous. They're fading him. That from 2012 to 2000, this is from Dwayne McFarland, who's great. From 2012 to 2024, 8 different wide receivers with at least 26 routes per game, so at least the wide receiver 3 on their team, scored 5 or fewer touchdowns in their first 3 seasons. 0 became 8 touchdown or more touchdown scorers. DJ Moore, Jarvis Landry, Kenny Stills, they all managed 1 spike season of 8 or more touchdowns, but the cohort basically averaged 5 touchdowns per season in their prime years. And obviously, this is a Zay Flowers stat, right? Because we know how brilliant he is, but this is a guy that has never been a huge touchdown scorer, and that's the anti Zay Flowers argument, is the concern about the red zone, zone looks for him. You also think about the fact that you've got a new head coach in Jesse Minter, you've got a brand new play caller in Declan Doyle. And so there's a lot of unknowns to this offense. Lamar Jackson, who's been hurt a lot, he's in his 29 year. This is all from Matthew Friedman over at fantasylife.com. Where do you sit about Zay Flowers? What have you heard from your sources in Baltimore about, obviously it's a big deal, but any concerns from you as an insider and fantasy player?
I remember back at the combine asking people about, you know, 5th-year option. Would you do that with Zay Flowers? And they were like, 100%. That's a guarantee. We'll definitely pick up the 5th-year option. So they're still in on him to an extent that I think maybe, you know, fantasy managers who've been disappointed might not be. So seeing the extension underlines that for me, because a lot of times you install a new offense or a new defense, you want to see how the players you have fit into it before making too many long-term commitments. So if they've made a long-term commitment to Zay Flowers before they've even seen him play in Declan Doyle's offense, that tells you that they believe he's going to be useful to them no matter what. So where is he, like, among wide receivers? Where is he getting drafted right now? Like, it's probably, like, to me, I always felt like if he was my number one,
he's a mid-tier wide receiver too right now in terms of where he's being drafted. And
I think that's right. Like, I always felt like if he was my number one, I would not like my team. If he's my number two, Yeah, I could see that. I think that's about right. If he's my number three, I feel great.
Yeah, no, I think that's all right. I mean, Valiant Vincent put it up there on the chat, is that like he's getting Amon-Ra St. Brown usage. And so, you know, the idea is that he's still a very solid wide receiver too, even without the touchdown equity. Like, I mean, you know, and then right, if he gets a little bit lucky and if we get him from 4 to 5 to like 7 or 8, then it becomes something very interesting right there. Valiant Vincent, one of the strong regulars. Let's keep in the wide receiver position here, Dan. Stephon Diggs, been rumored to go to my Commanders. All due respect to Treylon Burks and Dyami Brown, but we need a wide receiver too for my number five, for Faith, for my buddy Jaden Daniels. So am I getting Stephon Diggs? And if not, where is he going to go? Feels like he has a market. And then as long as we're talking free agent wide receivers, talk to me a little bit about Keenan Allen. Sounds like the Colts are kicking the tires on him.
Yeah.
Where do you expect these two guys to land?
I think those are two good spots. They're both at points in their career where they're not, like, I don't think either one of these guys is going to end up with like the Raiders, right? They want to go somewhere where they feel like they have a shot to be on a competitive team. And obviously when you talk about Washington, that's also home for Stephon Diggs. So I think that has a great deal of pull. I think that's the way he'd like it to turn out. And I think they have some interest there. It's just a question of timing and role. And as you mentioned, I mean, Treylon Burks played well for them over the second half of last year, but obviously a hard thing to count on. And Diggs, a veteran who played well last year in New England, makes a lot of sense in a couple of these places. And Keenan Allen, you know, just being at Chargers yesterday.
By the way,
yeah,
Stephon Diggs, just very clear, like, he played part-time Stephon Diggs, but on a points-per-game basis, he was wide receiver 22. He had 85 receptions, ninth most among wide receivers. Like, Stephon Diggs can still play at a high level. Maybe he can't play, you know, a full complement of snaps, but he's still, like, he would be a very good wide receiver, too. And to me, he's the clear cream of the crop in terms of the available free agent wide receivers out there.
And the other thing to know about Stephon Diggs, I go back a couple of years ago when the Texans traded for him. And, you know, I talked to some Texans people in camp and they said at the beginning of camp, and one of the things they were saying was like, Nico Collins is our best receiver. And I'm a little concerned, like, if Stephon Diggs doesn't agree with that, is this going to work out? But by the end of camp, the answer was yes. Like, Stephon got in there. I was like, yeah, Nico, he's doing things I can't do anymore. Like, I'll go over the middle. I'll do whatever it takes. So this is a guy that if you get him, he's not going to be a diva that demands to have all the cat. Like, he wants to do the work, whatever it is that you need. And I think you saw that last year in New England. And so you should feel good about that if your team ends up landing him. Keenan Allen, I was at Chargers yesterday, just sort of, you know, because that's where he landed late last offseason. Doesn't sound like, I think they're good with their receivers. So it doesn't sound like there's a reunion coming there. So Indianapolis makes a lot of sense. They have injury issues at that position. And, you know, they're going to need somebody to do the over the middle dirty work kind of stuff, because you know, Alec Pierce was the big signing and he only does the, you know, 70 yarder.
Every single season, Keenan Allen's played at least 10 games. He's had at least 70 receptions.
Yeah.
Unbelievably consistent. Played well for the Chargers in a limited role last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
EdEck 8590 says, fun fact, Keenan Allen cost the first forward pass in NFL history. It might be true. I'm pretty sure it was at that game as well. So it was a fun one. But what I would say here is that, you know, if he signs with the Colts, that we're all excited about Josh Downs this year and Tyler Warren, two guys that we expect to spend a lot of time in the middle of the field for Daniel Jones. And I feel like that would hurt Josh Downs' value if he winds up there.
But couldn't you see like Diggs just being Pittman and then like just assume everybody's got the same role as before?
Diggs, I could. Like, but Keenan Allen. Like, Keenan Allen's going to be.
Okay, I'm sorry. Keenan Allen. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
Too many Miller Lights on the bus with Stephen Jones last night there.
Too many. No, I didn't have any. I didn't get there. I was in bed at 9:30 like a good boy.
Oh, good God.
I like to try and stay on East Coast time, like when I come, so it's like, you know, it's not a shock to the system when I go back.
Dan, Stuntman Chuck wants to know, is there some kind of solar flare event happening behind you? What's going on behind you?
I don't know what's going on. I tried it. It's like hazy, right? The haze burns off late morning and it's beautiful sunshine. I haven't seen any clouds since I've been in Southern California, but yeah, I came up here. This is like VP seating. There's nobody here yet. Practice doesn't start for another, 2.5 hours. So I figured it'd be quiet. But yeah, the background, I guess I could have done better with the background. See, if you tilt it down, you can see like the Cowboys practice fields behind me.
That's good.
I don't know.
Hey, well, maybe they'll we'll see a little Dak out there.
If anybody comes back there, I'll make sure you guys can see.
Valiant Vincent saying Matthew Bure himself in the Jimmy Buffett shirt. I love it. That's right. I appreciate it. Is that a skin colored beret he's wearing today? It's not. What I would tell you is tonight, you know this, Dan, I'm a massive, crazy Jimmy Buffett fan. I saw 45 mm-hmm. shows before the man passed away. And I never got to take, I've taken my kids, my adult kids, they've seen a Buffett show. But my daughters, he passed away, unfortunately, before they could ever go. So tonight in New Jersey, the Coral Reefer Band, Jimmy's backup band, they are playing tonight. And so I'm going tonight after the show. I will head there with a good buddy of mine and our kids. And so I'm going to be able to take my daughters to see Jimmy Buffett or the Coral Reefer Band.
Where are they playing?
They're playing at some outdoor amphitheater in New Jersey.
Is that amphitheater down near the shore? It used to be called the Garden State Arts Center when I was in like high school and college. Yeah. And we saw Buffett there every summer.
It's something like that.
We never missed a summer. He came through there every year.
It's here, I'll tell you.
It's probably the same venue.
The PNC Bank Arts Center.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay.
I figured it was named, in Holmdel, right. It was called the Garden State Arts Center before everything was named after a bank.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's where I'll be tonight, by the way. If anyone's at the show, come say hi, say fins up.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it because it's not the same, but it's the closest. I've seen the Coral Reefers before. Mac McAnally does a great job. So it'll be it's a good vibe as well. All right, let's get to some questions here. I got a few questions. You were at Kansas City. You were at the Chiefs training camp recently. So let's start about the big one right here. Is Patrick Mahomes on track to start week one? Talk to me about the health of 15.
Yeah, everything's been positive. I mean, I had a chance to talk to Andy Reid after practice the other day, and he was like, you know, the key is keeping him safe, and everything we're doing out here right now is safe for him. So as long as that's the case, we'll keep it up. But he's delivered on everything they've asked. He's looked good. Now the pads come on. I think yesterday was their first day in pads. But right now, to this point, he's been able to do everything they've needed him to do and do it well. To the point where they're encouraged. I think he's playing week one. They're not going to say that yet because they know they still have to navigate the next few weeks, and so does he. But I think unless there's some kind of setback that we don't see coming, I would expect him to be out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at QB 13 right now. I mean, I think as we get better sense of his health and is he going to run, this is somebody who led all quarterbacks with 286 total yards per game last season. That was passing and rushing, you know, again. So, So it's just, but coming off the ACL, does he run as much? I currently am at 13. But again, if I know he's definitely starting week one, that number will rise. That rank will rise on Mahomes because certainly some concern about the injury or even starting slow is baked into that ranking. And you're telling me they feel like
that, I think, is the question, right? When does he get back to being like capital P, capital M, Patrick Mahomes, right? Because if he's playing week one with a brace on his left leg, like it's easy to see it not looking exactly right. So that's why they have Kenneth Walker.
Indeed. And we're going to talk about Walker here in a second, but I want to get to Travis Kelce, right? If we're talking about the passing game with Patrick Mahomes, now the question is Travis Kelce, does he have something left in the tank, right? This is somebody who last year, by the way, tight end 5 on a points per game basis in the 14 games that he played with Patrick Mahomes. But since 1970, literally the only tight end in their age 37 year to average 10 or more fantasy points in their age 37 year was Tony Gonzalez. Now, we know Travis is a special guy, but I'm just curious, do you expect same usage from Travis? Like, how does he look? How do you feel about Travis Kelce going into his 37-year-old season with the Chiefs?
He looks the same. And you know, you watch practice, and where he shows up is when, you know, Mahomes' first, second read isn't open, and, like, he knows that Travis has run a route that works. And he'll just flare out to the right and he'll just hit him for 6 yards and get down, get out of bounds. You feel like Travis could do that till he's 50. And especially with the trust that he and Mahomes have. So yeah, gone are the days, I think, of where you're like, oh, could this be like a 90, 100 catch guy? But you know, he was this league I play in for 32 years. We never separated out tight ends. It's all pass catchers. You can start three wide receivers or tight ends, any combination. He was always one of the guys that got drafted. There weren't many tight ends that were. I don't think he gets drafted in our league anymore. Although we got crazy Chiefs fans, so maybe he gets somebody throws a buck on him at the end. But yeah, no, I think he's. I don't know how relevant he ends up being for fantasy, especially because it seems like there's more good tight ends this year than we're used to. But he's going to be part of the offense. And if there's a game where Mahomes is in trouble a bunch, then that's probably the one where Travis gets a lot of catches.
Well, listen, I mean, I have him at tight end 10. I actually am more bullish on Kelce, and I'm more bullish Ved the Regular than Mark Andrews. I have Mark Andrews at 14. I have Kelce at 10. You can check out all my ranks for free at ESPN.com. No, I'm no longer there. At FantasyLife.com. I spent 15 years saying that. You can check out Dan's information at ESPN.com. But for me, fantasylife.com. My rankings are free on fantasylife.com. You can check it out. And I, like I said, I have Kelce at 10. I have Andrews at 14. I just think, again, all right, and raise the flags, asking Cyrus Allen, wide receiver one, or should wait until the 1-2 turn to draft him? There's been a lot of crazy Cyrus Allen hype. Not since Deneric Prince have we seen this kind of hype. I'm trying to think of some of the other, you know, there's every year I feel like there's a Chiefs rookie that gets hyped out of beyond belief and then does absolutely nothing. Dan, but Cyrus Allen, whatever.
Fifth round pick. Yeah. Fifth round pick, does something in practice every day. The days I was there, first day he made an incredible play. Second day I was there, he got hurt. But it doesn't sound like it's anything that's going to be too long term. Yeah, look, I asked them, like, what was he doing in the fifth round? And they said, you know, a lot of guys get drafted in the fifth round and are good. But what they liked, what they told me was they put on Cincinnati tape at the end of the year. They wanted to watch that offense. And this guy jumped off the film at them. Obviously not enough for them to take him in the first four rounds, but whatever. But they felt like, they said, go watch him play against Utah, which runs a man-to-man NFL-style defense, and look how productive he was in that game. He said that's the one that caught their eye and thought, well, this guy's somebody that knows a little bit about how to beat NFL-style defenses. So long way to go for him. Looks great in practice, and probably there's a role for him if he continues to look great in practice. But yeah, I don't think he's wide receiver one just yet.
No, yeah, I mean, he's obviously, but he is one of those trendy, buzzy names in fantasy football circles. By the way, Brian Hickman 3612 says Unsanctioned Bus Trip is a good fantasy team name or album name. Unsanctioned Bus Trip. Dan, like when you start your cover band, that's what it should be called.
Sounds good.
I like that. So, all right, Cyrus Allen, as we get from Cyrus Allen. Anyway, I'm in on Kelce. Cyrus Allen, I don't mind him as a late round flyer, but again, we've been here before many, many times with like buzzy Chiefs rookie. And I'm trying to remember some of the other names, like Deneric Prince is the one that comes up. But every year there's one like super buzzy Chiefs rookie that does absolutely. Sky Moore is another one. Yeah.
Sky Moore.
You and I heard the greatest Sky Moore story of all time, and we can't say it.
What? Yeah. It's really good though.
I know. It's a great story, but we were told off the record and we can't do it. All right. But like one of the ways that Cyrus Allen would get on the field, Dan Graziano, is if Rashee Rice can't pick up where he left off last season. Mm. So what say you on Rashee Rice? What did you see from him out there at Chiefs camp?
Almost nothing. Like he was limited to 7-on-7 stuff at this point and might still be for another week. So he's coming up. He had knee surgery. And then instead of going to do a rehab like most people would after knee surgery, he had to go serve 30 days in jail as a result of, you know, the traffic situation he got involved in Dallas last year in a probation violation. So he's behind. And my understanding was they wanted him to do a ramp up that was sort of like 7 to 10 days of nothing but 7-on-7s and then maybe start to add a little of 11-on-11 work. So this is a guy that might not be all the way up to full speed by the start of the season. They're taking it slow with him because he didn't really have the kind of offseason that they want their guys to have, especially guys that are rehabbing injuries. So the practices I was at, he was kind of a non-factor because when they went to team drills, which they did a lot, he wasn't part of it.
But just like Mahomes, where they, at the moment, they feel confident that Mahomes will be there week one, do they feel the same way about Rashee Rice?
I don't think it's possible for the team to feel confident about Rashee Rice, given everything. his injury issues, his off-field issues. He's becoming a very difficult guy to trust, not just for fantasy managers, but for the Chiefs. And so they know what he can do, and he's important to them if he's on the field. But they're at a point where they just don't know how much more I'm like, is he going to get suspended again? We don't know. Usually these things get delayed, and maybe it wouldn't be till late in the year or next year. But that's just sort of where the Chiefs are with him. Is this a guy that we can count on? And if the answer starts to lean no, then they start to, draw the offense up maybe a little differently.
Yeah, I am at wide receiver 13. I had him lower, but then we moved him up a little bit just because I felt like, it felt like there was some positive momentum about Rice. But there's no question. He is a risk-reward pick. If you knew he was healthy and playing every single game, he's potentially a top five, top six fantasy wide receiver. But to your point, there are no question marks. So, he's right there around the, Chris Olave and Zay Flowers range in terms of wide receiver twos that have wide receiver one upside, but there are things that need to continue to go right for them. Last question here, you see Aloha Bricks. How is KW3 looking out there? I'm going to add to Aloha Bricks' question here. It's clearly one of our regulars here, but how does Ken Walker look out there? But more importantly, do we think Ken Walker is going to see consistent usage in the passing game? We know he's going to get a ton of work in the run game. We know he's going to be the goal line back. But the thing that really unlocks potential number one running back in fantasy, Ken Walker, because that's, again, Gibbs and Bijan are great. But, there's a scenario where Ken Walker winds up the year as the number one running back in fantasy. But the only way that happens, Dan Graziano, is if they involve him in the passing game, which has been inconsistent with his time in Seattle.
They want to. They believe that the main reason he didn't get passing game work in Seattle was how good Zach Charbonnet is at it. And so they think that Kenneth Walker, and it shows up in what they paid him, they think he can be the bell cow back. Like, he can be the do everything guy, and that includes passing game work. So yeah, that was one of my big sort of fantasy takeaways I came away from Chiefs with, is this is a guy that's going to have the ball a lot. Mahomes is taking snaps from under center in practice, which is not something they've done a lot. That is a nod toward, hey, Kenneth Walker between the tackles, like, we want to be able to use him there, and this is the best way to maximize that. And talking to their front office folks, their coaches, they think they can throw it to him and that he's going to be very productive. They expect him to be a huge part of things there.
Well, that would be huge. He's, again, I talked about on the show yesterday, he's one of the guys that I can't stop drafting, that he's one of my five most drafted players. Since 2023, Ken Walker ranks sixth among running backs in yards per target, the minimum of 100 targets. When they do throw him the ball in space, and didn't happen a lot in Seattle, to your point.
Yeah.
But when they do throw him the ball, he's a good pass catcher, and obviously he's got the ability to take it to the house anytime he touches the ball. Last Chiefs questions for you before we take a break here, Dan. Did you get invited to Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift's wedding?
Yeah, I did, but I turned it down. No, I didn't get invited to Travis. I would ask, if you didn't get invited, then I wasn't going to.
I don't understand. I did not expect to get invited. I'll be honest with you. I did not expect to be invited. I wouldn't have expected you to be invited. But then when you see Dean Blandino get invited, then you're just sort of like, all right, well, okay, maybe it's a larger list than we would have thought. And by the way, like Dean. I've met Dean once or twice. He's a lovely
list
guy.
Than we would have thought.
He's a lovely guy, but you just
don't think
of...
It was a larger list than what I expected. There were a lot of people at that wedding. It seemed like every time, every day you find out somebody else was there.
Yeah, it was there. And you're like, wait, that
person?
Yeah,
it starts to feel...
I had that person make the list. There should be a Mendoza line. And some of them are like, you're below the Mendoza line. You should not. I'm sorry. You're not famous enough to be at Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's wedding. And you and I are clearly not above that list, which is fine.
Clearly.
We're not above that line. But
it's still, the line is a little lower than you thought.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. So I was just curious if you did. Did any of your, because it does feel like a lot of people that are in NFL media got invited to the wedding. Do you have any friends?
It does feel that way.
Did any of your friends get invited to the wedding?
No,
any of your
I don't
colleagues
really have
at
friends.
ESPN?
No,
that we know
the
about?
No, not that I mean, look, I mean, Jason, I'm sure was there,
of course,
and maybe some folks that he works with, but no, I don't know. I don't know too many. Man, I didn't even get asked to be on ESPN Jeopardy. Like, I'm like low on the totem pole there right now.
Wow,
so I don't even know if I would know people that got invited to that wedding.
Yeah, Dan, so I know, because I've seen all the social media and I'm friends with a lot of them, I know who's going to be on ESPN Jeopardy. Who on that list do you think you should be above?
Almost all of them. just in terms of ability to answer trivia questions, but I don't think that's what it was about.
Maybe not.
Maybe they wanted to put, you know, Sports Center people out.
Yeah. Well, what, I mean, yeah, they put a lot of Sports Center people in there. Like,
I don't know.
What about?
I was a little insulted because that's kind of been my thing on Get Up.
Yeah.
Right. Like the trivia stuff. Like I was a little hurt. Like, why didn't you guys call me?
Do you think that you were originally on the list and Joe Buck blackballed you?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, but that could have happened. Who knows? Who knows? Yeah, yeah, I mean, who do you think wins?
Now you've got me thinking.
Yeah, who do you think it was? Do you think like Jay Harris was like, I'll do it, but only if Dan Graziano isn't in? Jay Harris is, by the way, the nicest guy you'll ever meet. Jokes aside,
but I know who wins.
Oh, do you?
So I can't really say. Yeah.
Oh, it's already done.
I'm not at liberty.
Oh my gosh.
Well,
I'll tell you.
Stuff's already happened.
I'll tell you who I'm rooting for on ESPN Jeopardy, and then we're going to take a break. I'm rooting for Madeline Burke. Madeline Burke used to be my intern about a million years ago at ESPN. Yeah. So she's seeing her career blossom is just phenomenal.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She is an awesome human being. She does a great job. And she was a great intern, by the way, too. It's been very cool to see how her career has progressed. So that's who I'm rooting for, just so you know. So go Madeline. Team Burke over here. All right, I've got to take a quick break for audio. YouTube, stay with us. Regulars, keep it up. You guys are doing great. I'll be right back after this with Dan Graziano. As one of the regulars noted, I think it was Raise the Flags, a lot of Pino today. Pino Maddie getting ready, pre-gaming for the Coral Reefers tonight at the PNC Center in, is it Holmdel, New Jersey?
Holmdel. Sounds right, yeah.
All right. Anyway, we're still working out the kinks. It's show two. Bear with us here. New team with at the happy hour, and everyone's allowed to drink on the job. So you know, just bear with us here. Dan, you were at Rams camp as well. So you sort of joked about this earlier in the episode where you're talking to Rams coaches about, you know, the running backs, and they're like, "Is that a fantasy question?" I'm like, yes. So tell me, what is the split going to be between Kyren Williams and Blake Corum? We're hearing a lot of Blake Corum hype.
Yeah.
And so talk to me about what you see. That's the biggest anti-Kyren Williams argument is that we're worried Corum's going to take too much of his workload.
Yeah. And I think if they're both healthy all year, the split will look like it did last year because they were both healthy all last year. But that's a huge if
right.
at that position, especially with these guys. So Man, it's tough. Like, I had both of them on a team last year, and, you know, it's funny. I'll tell you a funny story. Mike LaFleur, who's now the Cardinals head coach, was the offensive coordinator with the Rams last year. And I had one of their games, and I was talking to him before the game about the running backs and how interchangeable they are. And he said, you know, it's funny. He said, sometimes, like, when I see one of them celebrating a touchdown in the end zone, I have to look close and see because they wear the same number or, like, one number off, 22, 23. And they're kind of built about the same. He said, so sometimes I can't even remember which guy was in there to score the touchdown until I take a closer look. So Mike LaFleur is all of us, because if you've ever had one of these guys in fantasy and you see the touchdown, you're like, was that 22 or 23? And so Mike was doing the same. Oh, he didn't care. That's the difference between Mike and a fantasy manager. So anyway, they have to keep both of them healthy. It's hard to keep both of them healthy. I think if you really want the Rams running game, you've got to take both guys and just deal with the stretches where, you know, you wish Kyren was on the field and instead it's Corum. Because if one of them gets hurt, I think the other one elevates to something probably pretty special.
Final 11 games of last season. So just you say like, hey, if they both stay healthy, it's probably going to be about the same as last year. Well, final 11 games of last season, week 7 through 18, Kyren Williams played 64% of the snaps. He averaged over 16 touches a game. He averaged 14.7 fantasy points per game. He was running back 11 on a points per game basis. That was Kyren. Yeah. And then Blake Corum played 33% of the snaps, got 11 touches of the game, 8.8 fantasy points per game, running back 37. So he was, you know, he was deeper league flex worthy.
Yeah.
And Kyren was a, you know, low end RB1, high end RB2. So I think that probably sounds about right. And you can see that's reflected in my ranks. I have Kyren at running back 14, I should say, you know, so high-end RB2, really, and I have Blake Corum at running back 35, number 103 overall. So you and I see that way the same. Again, they both need to stay healthy,
The Rams run a lot of plays, and they score a lot of points. So, like, you can, you know, you can expect them both to be as productive as they were last year. And again, if it's down to one of them, then, you know, you're talking about a lead winner type, right?
No doubt.
If he gets all the carries. Yeah.
If one of them gets all the carries. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I think you're right in that if you invest in Kyren Williams, you should actively try to acquire Blake Corum as well. Aloha Bricks has a good question. Dan, who's the most improved offensive player that you've seen so far in training camps that you've been to?
So the one that jumps out is Xavier Worthy with the Chiefs because, you know, they had big plans for him last year. And remember, he hurts his shoulder on like the third play of the season, the friendly fire with Travis Kelce.
Yep.
So when he came back, like they really didn't ask him to do all the stuff they were planning to ask him to do. So they want to involve him in a screen game. They want to run him on shorter stuff, get the ball in his hands, let his speed take over. So I don't know if he looks like an improved player, but he's a healthy player, and he's one that they really believe can be a big part of things. Now, again, Saturday's practice, he left with an injury, but it doesn't sound like it's too bad. Shin bruise is what we end up finding out that it is. So hopefully that doesn't cost him too much time. But that's a guy that they have big, big plans for in Kansas City to use in a number of different ways. And if he's healthy, I think that's that's probably the answer to, you know, the guy that's poised for the biggest jump among the fantasy relevant folks I've seen so far.
Yeah, Aloha Bricks, great question. And, you know, it's interesting because Xavier Worthy is not a guy, you know, he's a guy that everyone was in on last year. And then, of course, the injury, and he just suffered injuries. It was very frustrating. As everyone knows, he was part of my, League of Assholes team that won seven in a row down the stretch to only fail to make the playoffs. I lost the first eight games of the year, Dan. I had Xavier Worthy, Mike Evans, like every single player that got hurt early on.
Yeah.
It was awful. But what I was going to say is Xavier Worthy, people have sort of like, been there, done that.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting name because he's
might be worth a shot. I'm sure the price is not too high.
No, it definitely isn't. I'll come back to Xavier Worthy in a second, but in the meantime, I want to go back to the Rams. And so I feel like the Rams, you know, the way you and I collect stories about Jerry Jones's bus is the way the Rams collect tight ends. They have 8 million tight ends, I feel like. Is the hype on Terrence Ferguson real, or is it going to be one of these, like, again, we've got four or five tight ends, and they've still got Higbee there. They got a million guys, I feel like. They drafted one. Like, should you draft a Rams tight end? Here's the question for you, Dan. Should you, fantasy manager Dan Graziano, should we draft a Rams tight end, and is it Terrence Ferguson if the answer is yes?
I think the answer is no until you see otherwise, because asking about that the other day, what Sean McVay's ideal world, all these tight ends would be completely interchangeable. You know, there's some that are better at catching the ball than others. There's some that are better at blocking than others, but they really look at all their tight ends as guys that can on some level do both things. And that's what they want. They want to be able to, you know, put three of these guys on the field at once, and you don't know who, if any of them, is getting the ball. So while Terrence Ferguson, yes, has that skill set, he could theoretically emerge from that group as the top pass catcher. And they are really looking for like a number three receiver behind, Devontae Adams and Puka Nacua. And a tight end could be that. I just don't feel like they view any of these tight ends the way that, say, you know, Atlanta views Kyle Pitts.
Fair enough.
So Chicago views Loveland.
By the way, Xavier Worthy, I'm going to fantasylife.com right now, and Xavier Worthy is currently going 122 overall. So on our rankings page, you'll see, like, so you can get my free rankings.
Sounds like it's worth a flyer on that.
12th, 13th round is basically where he's going. So really good nugget there. Really, really appreciate that. Dan, let's see. So, all right. So that's the Rams. So I'm with you in terms of probably wait and see. I don't mind a late flyer, but wouldn't want to go into the season with Ferguson or any Rams tight end as my tight end one. Now, in addition to the Rams, you also were at Chargers camp. So look, never wrong, just early. My ride or die, Amarian Hampton last year, looked like a great pick. Then everyone on his offensive line died, and then he got injured, and it was just like the whole thing was a disaster. But there were times where he looked really, really good. I thought it was going to be a very strong pick. He in the games last year in which he saw at least 17 touches, Amarian Hampton had averaged over 18 fantasy points per game. He was running back 11 on a points per game basis. So on a points per game basis, he significantly outperformed ADP. So I don't consider that a bad ride or die pick. The problem is, of course, he just missed a lot of time. So my question in for you here is that we've got Mike McDaniel coming into the Chargers offense, who's, you know, somebody who's great at designing a run game. And we've got Amarian Hampton, former first round pick, now fully healthy. But They added Keaton Mitchell in the offseason, who was a Mike McDaniel target. Mike McDaniel really wanted Keaton Mitchell. Kamani Vidal, in filling in for Hampton last year, showed some flashes.
Yep.
Talk to me about what you're seeing from this Chargers run game.
Yeah, so Mike McDaniel comes from Kyle Shanahan and is going to want to build the whole thing out of the run game first and foremost. All this talk about Justin Herbert being unlocked, yeah, absolutely. But what McDaniel does and what McDaniel did so brilliantly, especially last year in Miami, was really innovative stuff with the run game. So the Chargers want to be in a position where, yeah, Hampton will be their number one. You know, somebody has to be the nominal number one. But I was talking to one person there yesterday who said, yeah, just because he's the number one doesn't mean he has to be 25 carries, doesn't have to be Derrick Henry for us. So they really feel like Kamani Vidal was excellent last year in relief and should get some carries. And Keaton Mitchell, as you mentioned, is a guy they went out and got. He is a difference maker. Joe Ortiz, the Chargers GM, was in Baltimore the year that Keaton Mitchell, you know, popped. Remember, he blew his ACL in a game, night game against Jacksonville after he was coming on. They felt like, you know, fast forward a month or two and they're in the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs and they couldn't score, that was the kind of guy they were missing. So he knows Keaton Mitchell. McDaniel told me flat out yesterday, this is a playmaker that I'm very excited about. So they know he can be a difference maker. I believe that he will have a role in that offense if healthy, and it could be one that frustrates you if you went ahead and used your first round pick on Amari and Hampton.
Yeah, I mean, I have Hampton at running back 11. I'm at 18th overall.
Second round pick.
I'm as a second rounder. I've seen some people take him at the end of the first round, but mm-hmm. I have him at the end of the second round as well. And so
it's another situation though, where like if you buy into the offense, if you think the Chargers offense under Mike McDaniel with Justin Herbert at quarterback is going to score a lot of points, then yeah, I don't think Keaton Mitchell should scare you off of Amari and Hampton. I think the run game with the Chargers has a chance to be very productive.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think they're all viable options as well. Maybe not Vidal, but I mean Keaton Mitchell in a deeper PPR league. I do think Hampton, again, I am at running back 11. I have him as a low-end RB1 and as a top 20 player overall. Again, never wrong. Just early. All right, let's talk about the wide receiver in Ladd McConkey, one of the players that I can't stop drafting. He's one of my top five most drafted players. Am I crazy about this? Or do we think McConkey's going to be the clear top option in this passing attack? We used a quote from Daniel Popper of The Athletic yesterday that saying that he thought the passing offense was going to go through that. But listen, he's an insider, but I'm not friends with him the way I am, Dan. So like, if you want, let's take a shot at Daniel Popper. Maybe he got this wrong.
McDaniel likes the receivers. He likes the variety. He likes that, like, you know, Quentin Johnston can be the big contested catch guy, red zone threat, all that kind of thing. But McConkey's the guy that can do all of it. So where the situation, a game a week might call for more Quentin Johnston, or a game might call for more Ronda Gadsden, or a game might call for more running the ball. The feeling I got was that they view Ladd McConkey as the constant and someone that can be whatever they need him to be, no matter, you know, they don't have to adjust his role up or down depending on the game plan and the opponent. So if healthy, yes. They had Keenan Allen, they added Leighton Camp last year. Again, I don't foresee that happening this time. He kind of ate into some of what Ladd was doing last year. And then of course, Ladd had some health issues. So healthy now, no Keenan Allen in the mix. Arrow up there on Ladd McConkey, I believe.
So Wolf John says, what's the pecking order of wide receivers 2 through 4 after McConkey? Mm. And before you answer that, I want to adjust his question slightly because, you know, I want to ask about just basically what's the pecking order of pass catchers after McConkey?
Oh.
Because as you mentioned, they've got Quinton Johnson. They have Trey Harris from last year as well. You mentioned a Ronde Gadsden earlier. But in this offseason, they add David Njoku.
Yes.
They add Charlie Kohler. We're hearing Charlie Kohler buzz, believe it or not. So talk to me about how do you see the pecking order of pass catchers after McConkey? And especially, do you think Gadsden has a bigger role after popping last year, but now more tight end competition?
Right. Well, Kohler's there as a blocking tight end. I mean, that's the appeal of him, and that's why they didn't feel their blocking from that position was good enough last year. And again, Joe Ortiz, he comes from Baltimore, knows Kohler.
Yep.
And so that was targeted. And also McDaniel felt like that. He was an important guy to get. I wouldn't worry about him. They view their top.
And Njoku's a great blocker too, though. Njoku's an unbelievable blocker.
Right, absolutely. So and healthy right now. So that's the key. They view their top three wide receivers as McConkey, Quentin Johnston, and Trey Harris. They really are happy with the offseason Trey Harris has had. You know, I think he's a guy that's coming along and could make a jump this year. They think Quentin Johnston will make another little jump forward. The tight ends, it's hard to think about investing in one of them for fantasy without seeing how it's going to shake out first. If Gadsden's blocking, I don't know this. If Gadsden's blocking was part of the disappointment they felt at tight end last year, and they go get Charlie Kolar and they go get David Njoku, that might tell you, that might be a little bit of a warning sign on Gadsden. If he's a good enough wide receiver to command more target share than Trey Harris, then that would be a positive. But I didn't get the sense that they necessarily view it that way. So another tight end group that I would say interesting, but I wouldn't go too hard investing in those.
I agree with it. By the way, Valiant Vincent says Justin Herbert should take his wife's name. Justin Beers would be an all-time football name.
Justin Beer.
It's true. Justin Beer. Come on.
Yeah.
Justin Beer.
It's not bad.
By the way, I'm just going to tell you right now, because they got engaged, and so yeah. You know, just like Travis and Taylor, I just if Justin and his soon to be wife Madison, if they decide to start an alcohol company called Justin Beer, through the roof.
That's my pitch
to Justin and Madison is they should start a company, an alcohol company called Justin Beer.
You know, if they're looking for like a little extra income, those two.
Yeah. 1,000%. Make a ton of money. My buddy Miles Teller sold Long Drink for like over $300 million.
Yeah,
and your colleague Jason Kelsey and his brother Travis, they have Garage Beer. Yeah. The sales on that, like, they're going to sell that for a ton of money. Like, yeah, alcohol's is a good space if you can do it right. All right. Too bad. That's H. Grogue. You're right. Too bad beer doesn't work on Barry. Dan Graziano can actually testify to this. What I've told my audience, Dan, nice job, H.
We've
Grogue.
Had
good
this
callback.
Conversation.
The regulars know that I'm impervious to alcohol, and it's really impervious to beer because Pinot Grigio gets me drunk. That's what I've got on here. Like, that's why everyone calls me Pinot Maddie. Like, tequila will get me drunk. White wine will get me drunk, but I am impervious to beer, Dan Graziano.
I think that's the kind of thing people tell themselves because it just feels different. But I don't know, man. I don't know if I can sign off on this. It doesn't make any sense. I guess I just don't. I'm not like medical science. Like, I'm just not up on it. I don't know how that would necessarily work, right? Like, alcohol is alcohol. But yeah, I don't know. If they want to keep telling yourself that, then I'm not going to stop you at this
point. I'm just saying, you and I have been out in Indianapolis roaming the streets at night where I do nothing but drink beer in Indianapolis because I don't want to get all hammered in front of like coaches and other media members and, you know, potential contacts.
It's a good policy.
So it's a way for me to be social.
Yes.
It's a way for me to be social without worrying about me doing something stupid as well. Mm. Ryan Oswald asking for the ankles. So Here we go. Let's see if I can do this.
I didn't know I was going to be in for this kind of treat today.
There you go. The ankler is back, baby. The ankler's back. There you go.
That's now a thing
right,
that
Scoop
has happened.
Newton. There you go. There they are. Yeah. There's the ankles. You're welcome, buddy. You're welcome. We have to take a break for audio. YouTube, hang with us right here. When we come back, you're at Cowboys camp. I want to ask you a couple of Cowboys questions, and then we will pick our Coach of the Year candidates in last call.
Okay.
Hang with us, audio. All right, Dan. I'm curious. Like, so last year in fantasy football, Javonte Williams was a revelation,
sure.
Right? And on a one-year kind of prove-it deal, and boy, did he prove it. And we expect the Cowboys offense once again to be one of the better offenses in the NFL. So my question to you is, talk to me about the backfield of the Cowboys, in terms of, is Jaden Blue going to have a bigger role in this Cowboys offense? Are we going to see some Phil Maffa and Malik Davis, or is it going to be Javonte Williams all over again?
I think it's going to start out being Javonte Williams all over again. There's an opportunity for Jaden Blue to show them something he didn't show in last year's training camp. And if he does that, there'll be a role for him. He's a guy they see as, he can bring a little bit of juice, a little bit of a different look than Javonte brings, but that fundamentally, they believe Javonte was a great signing for them last year. They re-signed him this year with their offensive line healthy. We know what it's going to look like. He can be productive. He can do exactly what Brian Schottenheimer wants him to do. And, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I believe the Cowboys are going to take that kind of approach to the run game. I think it's on you know, Jaden Blue to show them, hey, I deserve a role. And if he does that, if he starts showing out in camp, they'll find something for him to do. But I don't believe it would eat into what they asked from Javonte Williams.
Sorry, I'm just seeing everyone reacting to the ankles, which is amazing. The ankles plus subscription made me laugh there as well. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Jaden Blue is kind of an interesting, sexy name, but is not somebody that
it is a sexy name.
You know, like he but he would.
There's something sexy about it. Yeah.
Right. But what it sounds like is that he would need an injury to Javonte Williams to be fantasy relevant.
And even then, we don't
see,
right?
Unlike we're saying with Keaton Mitchell might have a role. Like, it doesn't sound like Jaden Blue's going to have a fantasy relevant role as long as Javonte Williams is healthy.
No, not again, unless he does something in camp that grabs their attention and goes, oh, this guy, we've got to find a way to get this guy the ball, which to my knowledge, I don't think that's happened at this point.
By the way, the regulars are commending your professionalism, Dan, to manage to keep it together when you saw my ankles and most of my leg.
It was a lot. I mean, it wasn't what I expected, when I came on, today, but you know, I guess, you gotta be open-minded, expect the unexpected as it were.
Expect the unexpected.
I have long pants on or else I'd show you, but no, it's not,
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. That would be a treat for us. Mm. Last one for you here on the Cowboys. You know, as we talk about like Cyrus Allen and some of these other guys, we keep hearing buzz about Ryan Flournoy. I keep hearing buzz about him. Do you think, I mean, CeeDee Lamb obviously is CeeDee Lamb, and George Pickens had a monster year last season. You've got a run game and you've got Jake Ferguson, who's always around. Can Ryan Flournoy carve out a fantasy relevant role as a third wide receiver? Can this offense support, or is it just more like he's going to be a nice piece for the Cowboys, but not somebody you can count on fantasy wise unless something were to happen to Lamb or Pickens?
I think it's the latter. They like him. I when they go three wide receivers on the field, he'll be the third one. And he's somebody that Dak Prescott trusts and believes in. So yeah, it certainly could be a factor game to game, but yeah, it's CeeDee Lamb, it's George Pickens. If those two guys are healthy and playing well, I think the expectation should be that they would get the ball more. But Ryan Flournoy is a guy they like a lot and could factor in, you know, a year from now if they don't keep Pickens, or, you know, if they start thinking about changes at the top of the depth chart and this guy keeps coming, he could be somebody to have for the future. But for this year, wide receiver three on the Cowboys, as great as we expect their offense to be, probably not somebody you're going to get consistent week to week production out of. I mean, look, I'm sure there's always a deeper
weeks,
league,
yeah,
but... right? Where you might need someone, maybe you're in 16 teams or whatever. I think he's pretty clearly the number three, a guy they like a lot.
Yeah, he's an interesting name for best ball, but that's about it as well. Thank you, Dan. By the way, Stuntman Chuck talking about guest ankles being a good bit, so maybe. Mm. Scoop Newton wants to know, am I crazy to even consider Pickens over Lamb? How do they see them? Is still Lamb 1, Pickens 2, or do they feel like kind of 1A, 1B?
The Lamb they gave a long-term extension to. Pickens, famously, they haven't. And so, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with they know Lamb better. They trust him more. Pickens only been here a year. And, you know, they got him for a third round pick for a reason. There was issues in Pittsburgh that had nothing to do with his talent that led them to sour on him. So the Cowboys want to see it again with Pickens. They've made that clear. He seems good with it. He's going to play on the franchise tag. But yeah, when everyone's healthy, CD is the alpha here. And Pickens is somebody who's certainly better than what they spent to get him. But I don't believe in their mind he has overtaken him as the number one wide receiver. The question with CD is going to be health. He was banged up a bit last year, and if that happens again, you know, that's where I'm talking about. Does the perspective end up changing over the course of the year?
Yeah, who knows? Maybe there'll even be a Jonathan Mingo signing. You never know. Way to keep a straight face on Jonathan Mingo.
Gave up a second rounder for him, right? No, it's the second. Yeah, no.
Fourth. I thought they gave up a fourth for Jonathan Mingo,
but it still didn't make any sense. Yeah, not a second. That's crazy. Yeah.
I'm being asked, would I keep Tony Pollard or George Kittle? Hard to know without knowing what you're having to, you know, if it one's a pick or what. Just in a vacuum, I prefer the elite tight end Kittle, to the running back.
But when's he going to play?
Well,
that's
you tell me.
That's the other question with Kittle. Yeah, well, I haven't been up. I'll be there tomorrow. Maybe I'll find out. But, yeah.
Yeah, let us know. Text me. I'll tell the regulars about it. All right. Okay, last thing for you here, Dan. Coach of the year. Who's your pick for coach of the year? Last call.
It's tough because it's always like the team we don't see coming. So like, how do I know, right? But I'm here at Cowboys camp. Let me throw that one out there. If they win the division, I think Brian Schottenheimer will get some coach of the year love because he got a lot of praise around the league last year for how he handled things in his first year, even though they didn't win a bunch of games. I think there's a feeling that, you know, he's establishing a culture around here that's pretty positive.
Yeah, no question. I mean, he navigated the Micah Parsons thing really well.
Sure.
My pick is a guy that I know you also like a lot is Kellen Moore of the Saints. But I mean, look.
Yeah.
It's an improving defense, second year of that offense. I like Tyler Shuck, second year in that system, coming into camp knowing that he's the guy. They signed Olave to an extension, as we talked about yesterday. I'm a big Jordan Tyson believer. They improved the offensive line. They improved the run game here. And then you're not really scared about that division either. So I could see the Saints,
right.
If the Saints end up winning that division, and the Saints are the fourth seed in the NFC, give me some Kellen Moore as coach of the year.
And if Tyler Shuck takes a jump, you know, Kellen's the play caller. He looks like a really good one. I think that's a nobody in that division had a winning record last year. So it's there for them if they want it. I like the Saints. I know it's gotten a little trendy, but I Kellen Moore strikes me as a guy. You know, there were some new coaches last year that really made strong impressions around the league. Obviously, everyone's impressed with Ben Johnson. Liam Cohen looked like a standout. And Kellen, even though his team didn't win the way those other two teams did, a lot of people around the league were impressed with the way his offense operated. And of course, with the way they brought the young quarterback along.
Yeah. I mean, they certainly, even though they didn't win as many games as you would have liked, they were a lot more competitive than I think people thought they were going to be. They were a lot more competitive in games.
Sure.
And to your point, the offense.
And they had a productive offseason. Yeah. There's a lot to like.
A lot to like there. Yep. All right. So listen, a couple of housekeeping things, not house cleaning things. I am clearly a little too many Pinos. FantasyLife.com. All my stuff there is free, but Fantasy Life Plus, if you use the promo code Barry, you get 10% off FantasyLife.com. Get Fantasy Life Plus. We have unbelievable tools, 37 different tools, including our Fantasy HQ tool that will help you, that will sync with your league no matter what where you play, give you advice on who to trade, who to win. Customized advice from me for your league at FantasyLife.com if you subscribe and get a Fantasy Life Plus subscription there as well. And sign up for a guillotine league. It's free. Go have fun. If you've never played a guillotine league, you absolutely have to do it, Dan. Have you tried a guillotine league yet?
I have not. I have not. I'm interested.
I'm going to get you into one of them.
I think we're doing them at ESPN this year, too.
You're calling them something different. You know, don't get me started. But
probably.
Yeah, no, you guys are. But anyway, Guillotine League, play it at guillotinelagues.com, please. ESPN doesn't need the money. I could use it. Anyway, so
there you go.
I'm a company man. And, you know, listen, if you want Fantasy Life Plus, but you want more subscript premium sites, rotopass.com is also, it's a bunch of great sites for one low price, including Fantasy Life Plus, which is all my stuff. Please like and subscribe my new YouTube channel. Dan, I need you to do this. I think that's what the kids say. Like and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Please subscribe to my podcast feed as well. Again, I don't care where you listen to it. I just need the clicks. I just need the subscribers. You don't actually have to listen.
Just need the numbers.
Yeah.
Got you.
There you go. All right. Well, listen, good luck at Cowboys camp, Dan. Everyone follow you on social media.
Thanks.
At Dan Graziano, ESPN. Anything else you want to promote, brother?
I mean, I'll be on ESPN all day. I'm actually about to be on NFL Network, which is a first. There's a lot of weird changes going on at our place. ESPN.com, kind of an around the league notebook today. Me, Jeremy Fowler, Ben Solak, what we're seeing at different camps. So people should check that out. A lot of good fantasy nuggets in there as well.
Yeah, no question. I will absolutely devour that. I can't wait. All right, ESPN.com for Dan Graziano stuff, at Dan Graziano ESPN on social media. Have fun at Cowboys camp. Listen, it's closing time, which means you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. We're back live at noon tomorrow Eastern with Austin Eckler, fan and fantasy legend Austin Eckler, who's going to break down all the running back questions we have tomorrow at noon Eastern. Friend of the podcast, proud Fantasy Life investor Austin Eckler will be here tomorrow. So we will see you then. Dan, thank you. You're a legend and a scholar. Appreciate you. We will talk to you down the road. And for everyone else, we'll see you tomorrow. Peace out.